He had also been invited to visit the Soviet Union by an official of the embassy in Brazil, which confirmed my suspicion that the Soviets were taking a more serious interest at official level in psychical phenomena than one might have thought. I learned later that Chico Xavier had also been invited to the USSR but had declined, or rather his spirit guide had declined on his behalf. In 10 years of healing he had attended to an estimated 65,000 clients, as he called them. More than half of these were in Salvador, capital city of his home state, and the rest in Rio de Janeiro, Niterói, Belo Horizonte, Recife and Aracaju, all capitals of other Brazilian states. His clients included one marshal of the army, 8 generals and over 50 doctors. He had treated a number of foreigners, including about 30 Portuguese who had come to Brazil specially to see him. The first of many surprises he had in store for me concerned his religion. I had assumed him to be a spiritist, for he certainly behaved like one. "No, I'm not a spiritist," he said firmly. "Spiritism is too refined, and I'm too coarse. I'm a Christian, I believe in the existence of Christ, and I try to love my neighbor and do what I can within my limits." It all sounded very simple, and I said so. "Of course," Edivaldo replied excitedly. "Being a Christian is too easy. What does it mean? It means following the commandments of Christ for the benefit of others. Begin by loving your neighbor. Whoever loves also understands and helps, you see?" This brief and simple statement of faith seemed, as we sat in the quiet suburban sitting room, capable of solving most of the world's problems overnight. It also sounded very much like the faith of a Cartesist spiritist. I asked how Edivaldo's relations were with the church. "I was brought up a Roman Catholic," he answered. "I am a Catholic in the sense that society expects everyone to have a religion. But the church doesn't want to know about me. It has always sought a monopoly and that's why it's coming to an end. The church doesn't do anything, priests least of all." This was stated without rancor, merely as a fact of life. I began to see why official statistics on the number of Catholics in Brazil could be misleading. "Once," he said, "a priest had told him he was possessed by a devil. I replied that if the devil can relieve pain, open up a stomach and remove an ulcer, then I prefer the devil. I asked him if he had studied parapsychology, and if he was familiar with the work of other reputable healing mediums, such as Edgar Cayce. He had never heard of Cayce, nor of any other healers except Arrigue Tilda Cubed, to whom he insisted he was not the successor. He had little interest in parapsychology as such. It only studies the soul, he observed. Mediumship shows what the soul can do. As for reading matter in general, his favorite was Chico Patinhas, the Brazilian version of Donald Duck, and he surprised me still further by saying he did not even read the Bible. "Don't give me one," he exclaimed, "because I won't read it. They say the Bible was written to unite people with God. Well, all it does is just the opposite. Look at Northern Ireland. Now if all that discord comes out of the Bible, then I won't read it. I want to believe in Christ in my own way." So much for established religion, I thought. Next, I wanted to know how he had become a medium. These, it would seem, tend to be made rather than born, or to have their strange talents thrust upon them in curious ways. Cayce saw visions and heard voices, Peter Hercos fell off a ladder, and Edivaldo was seized by a fit of madness. It was in 1962. A neighbor of mine, Dona Zelita, had gone temporarily insane, so I went to sit with her while they fetched a doctor. When we were alone together I suddenly went mad myself for about an hour. I was completely unconscious, a spirit took me over and I became violent. When I recovered, there were broken things all over the place, but the woman had got better. I could not imagine Edivaldo being violent. He seemed the gentlest of souls, though I noticed a definite difference in personality between that of the man I was talking to and the doctor I had consulted. The Calaisan's voice was authoritative and brusque, though not harsh, and his general manner came across as strong and demanding, quite unlike Edivaldo's. "Soon afterwards," he went on, "something similar happened again. I had gone to visit a lady who was suffering from rigidity all over the body shortly after childbirth. Suddenly I went all rigid myself, while she became normal. After these two experiences I feared I was going mad, so I asked a doctor friend, who was also a psychiatrist, what I should do. He said I was a medium and suggested I go to a spiritist center. I didn't want to at first, but word got around town that I was possessed, so finally I agreed to go along with a friend. That was the evening he performed his first operation. He recalled none of the details, just as he had no conscious memory of any of the healing work, not always involving operations. He reckoned he had performed subsequently some 65,000 times. On the way to the center I felt my right leg go all stiff. Then afterwards there was this Portuguese fellow who was driving me home in a Jeep, who said I had operated on him, to cure his alcoholism, on one of his internal secretion glands. He never drank again, anyway. That was all he remembered. I just have this condition, and I try to use it to do good, he said, adding as if the information was relevant, I never drank, gambled, smoked or danced. He had never had any conscious contact with any of his attendant spirits, he said. These were said to include Dr. Calaisons, a Frenchman called Pierre, a Londoner called Johnson, the famous Dr. Fritz from Germany, plus a Japanese, an Italian and a Brazilian. He only learned what he had been up to in trance by listening to tape recordings and looking at photographs, of which he had quite a large album. He was completely at a loss to explain how he did what he did. He told me he had no special psychic gifts during his normal state, apart from the ability to control his mind to a high degree and shut it off completely when it was time to receive a spirit and go to work. He insisted that he never invoked spirits, and that according to both the Quran and the Bible, which he knew well, even if he no longer read it, one should never do this. I don't invoke anything, he exclaimed. The spirits just come. I sit down and withdraw my own spirit, and Dr. Calaisons takes over. There isn't room for two spirits in one body, you see. When this happens, all Edivaldo feels is a strong light in his eyes, which he told me was like that of a welder's blur lamp, and then he is out. The first time he was introduced to his own wife while in trance he had no idea who she was. Nor, I was amazed to hear, had he any idea that he had operated on me. He was as surprised to learn this as I was to find he did not know. He seemed quite concerned about me, and peered intently at the tiny red dots on my stomach. You could have asked Dr. Calaisons to leave the scar, you know, he observed. He will if you ask him. He was also anxious to make sure I did not feel I had been deceived in any way. Nobody tried to hypnotize you, did they? Or use any sort of auto-suggestion? Or anything like that. Well, then. He seemed as curious as I was to find out how it all worked. You must investigate, Guy. A few more like you, and spiritism will either develop or disappear. Unlike many Brazilian medium healers, Edivaldo is a well-educated and intelligent man, although you could not call him an intellectual. Although he knows little more than anybody else about how the healing power actually works. He was able to give me some fascinating insights into the methods he believed were involved. Operations, he told me, can be either what he called plasmic or ectoplasmic. In the former, separation takes place of the red globules from the plasma, only the latter remaining visible. Ectoplasmic operations were totally invisible to our eyes. He assured me that operations were not performed as quickly as I had imagined. Patients, he said, were already being operated on as they waited in line, and the part where they lay on the bed was only the end of the process. The actual manipulation was only to convince them that they really had been operated on. How would the clients feel if they got onto the bed and were told their operation was over? He asked me. The spirits, it seemed, sometimes left permanent proof of their existence. At one point in our interview, Edivaldo suddenly stretched out his arm towards me. Feel this, he said. It's a pin that Dr. Fritz put there. I felt. There was indeed a hard, thick object like a nail about an inch long just below the skin of his left forearm, which was unmarked. He told me the pin or nail, the word is the same in Portuguese, had been put there as a sign of his mediumship. I had known of other mediums being given what are known in the trade as apports, as a sign of appreciation for their services. Dr. Calazans, he told me, was quite a specialist in apports, which had included a bar of radium and a live snake. Another favorite habit of his was squeezing essence from roses, while another spirit had once materialized a pipe that had been found to be over 200 years old. I steered the conversation back to healing. Could any disease be cured? I wanted to know, and had he ever failed? His reply was immediate. If I failed, would they still come to me? One failure would ruin everything. Don't forget I've been doing this for 10 years. Concerning incurable diseases, he reminded me that there were such things as karmic disorders, often given us at birth because of our behavior in a previous life. An orthodox Kardecist interpretation would be that we voluntarily choose such conditions in order to learn patience and sympathy for other sufferers. These included epilepsy, deafness, dumbness and stunted growth, and tended to be incurable, though Edivaldo went on to claim he had controlled, as he put it, a number of cases of epilepsy. There is the petit mal and the grand mal, he explained. I can only cure the first. I asked if he had had any luck with cancer. I can give you the names of several cancer patients who are cured today, he replied, and promptly did so. One was that of a member of the Foreign Consular Corps, cured of cancer of the larynx. He also mentioned the case of a European woman cured of leukemia, and that of a lady who had come over from Norway to be treated for psoriasis. That's incurable, you know, he said cheerfully. Anyway, she went home cured. Damned attractive she was, too. Edivaldo's only regret is that he has not been able to spend a weekend with his wife and children for 10 years. I wish there were more like me, he said wistfully. So much healing seems to be necessary. I mentioned a BBC World Service broadcast I had heard in which the British healer Edward Fricker had said he longed for the day when every hospital would have a psychic ward where experienced healers could try and help terminal patients. Edivaldo thought this was a splendid idea. When medicine and mediums get together, he exclaimed, humanity will get 70% better. He reminded me that he had treated more than 50 doctors, few of whom could doubt his abilities, though winning over the medical profession as a whole was another matter. I agreed this was a difficult task. Evidence for the reality of psychic healing would always be rejected, simply because researchers like myself were not qualified to collect and assess it. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, Edivaldo began to yawn and I stood up to leave. Two final questions. Was he happy with his work? Felicissimo, he exclaimed. Very happy. Just what we did today. And could he stop if he wanted to? No. Only they can stop. It is they who work, not me. I can't stop something I'm not doing. It's an extraterrestrial condition I have, supernormal. How I get it, I don't know. I said good night and wandered out into the empty street to wait for a taxi. Providentially, one appeared at once, and sped me through the deserted suburbs to my hillside home in the city center. For me, spiritism had begun to develop rather than disappear. 2 weeks later, buses and cars roared past as I waited in a busy street outside the house where I had arranged to meet Edivaldo again. It was a large old house, one of the few of its kind in central Rio not to have been demolished to make way for apartment blocks. It belonged to a successful businessman who also ran a small spiritist center in his basement, where on alternate Saturdays Edivaldo would come with his team of helpers to diagnose, prescribe and where necessary operate. 20 or 30 people had already been admitted through the huge iron gate by the time Edivaldo and his party arrived. As on our previous meeting, he greeted me casually like an old friend. The owner of the house accepted me at once as a guest of Edivaldo's, and we all went down to the spacious basement. Here, there was a calm atmosphere quite unlike the crush and near squalor of the other center. The room was clean and simply furnished with wooden chairs, a large dining table, the usual quotations on the wall, and a blue light in the ceiling. The far end of the room was closed off by a curtain, while soft music came from a loudspeaker in a corner. The main part of the room was already full to standing capacity as Edivaldo picked his way through the crowd and went to join the half dozen mediums at the table, leaving me near the door. There was a hush, as before the rising of a theater curtain, and almost at once we heard Edivaldo clearing his throat loudly. "Bonsoir, Mzamis." It was the voice of Dr. Pierre, the French member of the team of spirits who work through the mediumship of Edivaldo, speaking correct but very elementary French. He wished everybody well and gave way to an Italian voice, which was followed in turn by another voice saying good evening in English with a strong Bayan accent. Finally, after a few Germanic noises from the legendary Dr. Fritz, we were greeted in the fluent Spanish of Dr. Glazens. Later I was told that he in fact did all the talking for the others, hence the variety of accents. Edivaldo finished his brief greeting in the Calaisan's voice, then got up and went behind the curtain, calling for the first two patients, una consulta y una operacia tilde cube den. I was just wondering how I was going to get through the crowd and behind the curtain after my story, when suddenly I heard Calaisan's, I will call Edivaldo while in trance by the name of his supposed control, calling loudly for the Ingels. I parted the curtains and went into the clinic area. There were two beds, a small table littered with bottles and bandages, and two chairs, on one of which Edivaldo was sitting beside his first operation case, a typical looking Brazilian man of about 30. So you're the parapsychologist, are you? Calaisans called out. Take a chair and come and sit by me. I had barely had time to greet him in reply when he launched into a stream of very rapid Spanish, apparently explaining for my benefit how he worked. And my tape recorder was outside in the hall. One does not turn on tape recorders at spiritist meetings without specific permission if one never wants to be invited again. I caught only isolated words and short phrases. Apostrophe. Separate the etheric double. Fourth dimension. Remove the plasma from the red corpuscles. Ectoplasm. I was fairly used to interviewing people under difficult conditions, but this time I had been caught off my guard. As if to gloat over my discomfiture, Calaisans asked, where's your tape recorder? Go and fetch it. I suppose you would go fishing without a fishing rod. He chuckled happily as I left. And by the time I had fought my way back and set up the recorder, he was already at work on his first patient for examination. Again, he invited me to sit beside him, and asked if I could see well enough. I assured him I could. The blue light was subdued, but light enough to read by with difficulty. Handel's Lager wafted from the speaker. Calaisans waved his hands over the bare stomach of the man lying on the bed. Here we are over the human laboratory, he said, as if lecturing a class of ignorant parapsychologists. This, the stomach, liver and pancreas, is where the body is made or destroyed. This is where the acids are mixed, the airs and the vessels. He broke off to ask again if I could see properly. I assured him I could. With the eyes, on with the mind? He asked. With the eyes at least, I replied. Calaisans seemed highly amused. So this isn't for parapsychology, he observed, as if enjoying some private joke, as his hands already began to probe around the man's belly area. Feeling all right? He asked the patient, getting a faint grunt in reply. Calaisans turned to me. Now he's feeling it open. Not in the mind, but in the body itself, above the stomach. I noted he said above and not in the stomach, reminding me of theories I had heard to the effect that psychic operations are carried out on the paraspirit body, not the physical one. Now we are putting in a drain, he went on, though I could see nothing happening at all, to serve as tubing. Know what that is? He turned to the young Brazilian doctor who was watching from the other side of the bed. Give him a medicine lesson, he said, good-humoredly. The doctor took no notice of me, perhaps afraid I would report him to the local medical association. Doctors, I had found, had to be very well established before they would talk to strangers about psychic surgery. How long should he rest? An assistant asked. 48 hours, Kalazans replied at once. It then turned out that the man had been planning to drive himself home, and had nobody with him. Kalazans seemed to think this was extremely amusing. Only if you go by rocket. He chuckled. Next patient, please. The man climbed stiffly off the bed and slumped on the other bed. He looked dazed and weak. The whole operation had been entirely invisible to my eyes, but he had certainly felt something. He began to moan incoherent phrases to himself. Meanwhile, the next patient had come forward, an Argentinian lady with whom Kalazans chatted happily about the difference between Spaniards like himself and Los Argentinos, especially the latter's eating habits. While he diagnosed her problem and scribbled off a prescription, another patient for operation had climbed onto the bed. The previous one was still looking very helpless and trying to lie down on the other bed. Kalazans looked across at him. And he wanted to drive himself home. He exclaimed callously. Hey, these Brazilians are difficult. It was a huge joke, at least for him. Oh, by the way, he said to the Argentine lady as she was leaving. Don't forget that your husband is going to meet a violent death in one of these Brazilian cars. He named the make, apostrophe. A red one. He might have been reminding her to buy the fish on the way home, and turned his attention at once to the next patient, while the woman anxiously discussed with an assistant whether it was worth contacting her husband, from whom she was separated, and warning him. The man on the other bed was getting worse. Kalazans told the doctor to give him a massage and make him take deep breaths. He turned to me. See the effect of the anesthetic? He asked, again as if addressing a beginner's class. Know what that is called? No? Shock, that's what. Anaphylactic, or postoperative shock. The poor fellow really looked terrible. He was yawning, moaning and begging to be allowed to lie down. No, Kalazans rapped sternly. Sit upright and drink some coffee. Then he added, as if really wanting to rub it in, and you still want to drive yourself home, eh? What's that, taxi? Well, that's better. He turned to me. Go over and help him. Use your mind. I went to the other bed and made soothing noises. Kalazans could be devastating at times. When one frail old lady told him she was feeling better, he exclaimed better. You call this better? Another patient, a young man with long hair, was startled on being asked, when did you last use narcotics? Yet for all his exuberance and apparent rough treatment, there was no mistaking Kalazan's concern for his patients. The man on the other bed calmed down at last, and Kalazans called me back to watch the next operation, after casually mentioning that he would have to change a kidney for the last one. How would you do that by parapsychology, eh? He asked me, as he turned at last to the woman waiting for her operation. She was fully dressed. Onlookers were always asked to leave the room when women's private parts were treated or examined. She had pulled her sweater up to reveal a bare stomach. This operation, he told me, was going to be one of the visible ones. I put the microphone of the recorder on the floor and leaned forward. What happened next was enough to dispel any lingering doubts I may have had about the reality of psychic surgery. Put your hand here, he ordered. His own were already on the woman's stomach, prodding around. I could see nothing unusual as yet, though the area he was prodding seemed to be wet, glistening in the soft blue light. Suddenly he rubbed a finger on her skin and almost stuffed it up my nose. Water, he observed. Know this type of water? The pungent smell of pure ether was unmistakable. There was absolutely nowhere that I could see, at least on this plane, where it could have come from. There was no sign that I could see of plastic sachets taped to his palms and punctured by sharpened thumbnails, which I had seen operators in the Philippines quite clearly doing on several pieces of video recording. I looked at the patient's face. She was an attractive young woman with long dark hair. She seemed to take no notice of me, although her eyes were open, so after some hesitation I put my right hand on the nearest bare patch of stomach, beside the spot Kalazans had been feeling. Then Kalazans got down to business. This was indeed to be an example of the other kind of operation, the messy kind. a few twists and wrenches, and suddenly his fingers were immersed in a pool of dark liquid that had simply appeared from nowhere. It had certainly not come from a palmed sachet. "Go on," Kalezans insisted. "Put your hand in." He took his own hands away. The pool of liquid remained in position. "It is not possible even to simulate this effect by normal methods. The slightest movement will spill the liquid over the side of the body. Moreover, if you press down on an abdomen, you tend to get side-to-side depressions, not the top-to-bottom ones like the one I was seeing." I managed to get about an inch of one finger into the dark pool. It was yet another moment of truth, not that I should have needed proof. The liquid was warm, and checking later that evening with water heated to blood temperature, I found it felt very similar. It looked lighter and thinner than blood, and I remembered that phrase about separating the red corpuscles from the plasma. Oxygenated water. Kalezans ordered, and an assistant poured some liquid from a small bottle into the hole. It frothed and bubbled, and I snatched my finger away. It remained wet and sticky for some minutes, but was not discolored. Then the liquid pool on the woman's stomach simply vanished, like spilt water in an animated cartoon. Kalezans was explaining to the young doctor what he had been doing. "We took the etheric. Separated it. Closed, to retain the pains. All this here, 30% to 40% red." It was technical talk from one doctor to another, and not for my benefit. I transcribed the exact words as I recorded them on tape. Then it was back to the production line routine of consultations, some of which lasted less than half a minute. Hand on the stomach, scribbled prescription, and next patient. "Please." Kalezans seemed to be able to diagnose instantaneously. One woman, whom I knew to be suffering from ear trouble, I had brought her along as a test case, was given her prescription before she had time to open her mouth. One of the three medicines prescribed was Orikovit, which is specifically for ear trouble. Kalezans had not even looked at her ears. Another elderly patient complained of nervous problems. "Nerves," Kalezans exclaimed, back to his ebullient self. "You're on the verge of the lunatic asylum. This isn't nerves, it's schizothymia. What do you suggest, doctor?" the old lady asked timidly. "I'm not going to suggest anything," Kalezan snapped back. "I'm going to treat you. Otherwise you'll end up in a sanatorium." A few lightning scrawls on his prescription pad, and he handed her a sheet of paper to be deciphered by Firmino upstairs. "Next patient, please. Put the Ingles at the table," Kalezans ordered suddenly. I left the recorder running under the bed, went through the curtains and sat down at the table with the silent mediums, where I did my best to think positively. Soon the last patient had been treated, and the last operation, the cancer of the uterus, performed. No doubt this was why I had been told to leave the operating area. Then Kalezans came over to the table and sat with us for a few moments, said a brief prayer, muttered a few words in the voice of what sounded like a slave from Brazil's colonial times, and finally woke up, like Superman turning back into Clark Kent. Edivaldo got up at once, looking fresh and cheerful. He slapped me on the back and asked if I had enjoyed myself, then went upstairs for a snack and a coffee. For him, it had been just another long day's work, the same as any Saturday or Sunday. For me, it had been another evening of what Einstein calls humble admiration of the illimitable superior spirit who reveals himself in the slight details we are able to perceive with our frail and feeble minds. I was in the position of an ancient Greek rubbing two pieces of amber together, and producing what would be known as electricity nearly 2,000 years later, without having any idea what he was doing. Back home, I drank a welcome cold beer and searched my bookshelf for some of the answers to the many questions filling my head. Einstein was the only help. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their most primitive forms, this knowledge, this feeling is at the center of true religiousness. It was good to know that some things were impenetrable even to Einstein. They certainly were to me. There was a sad ending to the story of my investigation of Edivaldo Oliveira Silva. On the 9th of March 1974 he was making another of his lengthy drives to Rio for another weekend of healing when he was involved in a head-on collision with another vehicle. He died in hospital a couple of hours later, aged 43.